on the weekend panel this morning, the journalist, philanthropist and sporting commentator Lavina Good and Mike Williams, the former Labour Party President and Chief Executive of the Howard League. Kia ora korua, Mike's with me in Auckland, Lavina in Tauranga. How are you, Lavina?
Really, really good. I don't have Betty Davis eyes. I do have Alice Cooper eyes because I didn't remove the makeup last night, and I'm really relieved that this isn't a visual Skype. I really am. Good morning, guys.
Alice Cooper eyes. Hello, Lavina. And Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, a highlight or low light from the past week from each of you to start, please. Mike, do you want to do the honours?
Okay, I've got two highlights. One's important and the other's banal. Highlight that's important is the Howard League is within bull's roar of getting 10,000 licences for recently released prisoners. And this is a real milestone. We've hit it over 18 months early, and it's because our tutors are just so keen and the demand is really heavy. So that's my big highlight. A minor highlight is I hate congestion. Nothing annoys me more than getting stuck in congestion and driving around Auckland at 4 kilometres an hour. And I'm very good at avoiding it. But last week, because I had a meeting in South Auckland relatively late in the day, I got caught. But I found the antidote.
Helicopter?
No, it's called Concert FM.
Oh, it's soothing.
Yeah.
Maybe you could move out of Auckland to a place like Tauraha.
No, I couldn't.
Okay, then. Lavina, how about your week?
Well, I would like to say the last time I spoke to you guys, I was really despondent about what was happening with Tauranga Council, how it was defunct and Tenby Powell had quit. And I think I've proclaimed to have the worst council in the whole country, which Mike wanted to challenge me on that one, but to be fair. And since then, I've had the fortune of meeting the Commissioner Anne Tolley and her counterparts also in terms of what's happening with Tauranga, and things are looking up. They're movers and shakers. They've identified congestion as also an issue here, Mike, so, you know, a couple of billion dollars yep. needs to be spent on infrastructure. The growth of the city is really important, but the heart of the city is the people, and Tauranga doesn't have a story, and they want to make sure that that happens and emphasise the fact we need a story. So I was very despondent a few months ago, but after meeting the commissioners, things are looking up here in Tauranga. It gives me some relief.
Very pleased to hear it, but a couple of billion does sound like a slightly tall order.
Yeah, and the money has to come from somewhere. And on the back of that, I guess there'll be a rate increase, at least 16 to 17%, I'd assume, for residential rates. So everyone's going to have to pay an extra dollar a day. But I think it's just forward thinking and looking what has not worked in the past rather than it's not working, it's not working, it's not working. We need a leader. We need someone to give us some guidance and purpose and direction. And Anne Tolley seems to be that mover and shaker at the moment.
A dollar a day does always sound better.
It does.
Actually, Lavina, you first on this one, if you wouldn't mind, an alternative offer to Silver Lakes valuing New Zealand rugby at $3.8 billion has come from Forsyth Barr. So New Zealand rugby would sell a 5% stake in its future commercial revenues through an NZX listing. This would do the trick regarding raising funds maybe, but the other part of the Silver Lake offer, Lavina, was using social media worldwide to push the game massively overseas. So what do you think of what's been on the what's been put on the table now?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, the New Zealand Rugby Players Association have never been happy with that Silver Lake offer or the Silver Lake deal. And Silver Lake have been very honest in the past and said we want a 15% stake and we'll be able to raise heaps of money for New Zealand Rugby. New Zealand Rugby were losing $40 million a year due to COVID. But there's other issues as well. There's lots of young players now, Jim and Mike, who have decided not to play rugby anymore. So there's a huge issue of grassroots rugby. It's not just about injecting funds. And I know this latest offer from Forsyth Barr, which has been driven from the Players Association, is saying, hey, we'll keep it Kiwi, put it on the New Zealand market. It only has to be 5%. We'll raise a couple of $100 million, which will get everyone happy and we can pay players more. But it's beyond raising the funds. I think what the Silver Lake offer was saying is that we could not just, you know, raise enough money to make sure that New Zealand rugby is financially viable as we move forward, but will generate interest to 60 million people that have never even heard of the All Black brand and can sell it. So the offer's on the table. I saw that Richie McCaw had come out over the weekend and said, look, let's look at both offers. I think that's important, that rather than just have a Players Association or the New Zealand Rugby Union say one or the other, look at them both. There's benefits to both of them at this stage.
Yes, that's what Richie McCaw was saying. Lay them out side by side. Mike, do you understand why New Zealand Rugby's run such a strong defence here? You know, shocked and disappointed by the players' attempt to destroy.
Yeah, no, I don't understand that, and I think that is exactly the wrong response. Mm. I think Richie McCaw's dead right. Let's have a mature debate about this, put them side by side, and make a decision. There are pros and cons for both of them. And I mean, I'd put a bit of money into this, given the opportunity, but it's got to be, you know, as I said, maturely discussed, not just this response, shocked and disappointed. It's nonsense.
A quarter to nine. Court agrees with motorist who took on police to fight $30 speeding fine. This is Mike Bryce in Kaikohe, who was found guilty of doing 57 k's an hour in a 50 k zone, but not fined, because the court agreed that the police position on speed tolerance has been confusing. Do you understand why the police simply won't come out, not that I've heard anyway, and say, yes, we used to apply lenience when you're a bit over the limit, but we won't now, rather than, no, there's always been a speed limit, and that's it, Mike?
Well, they do, in fact. I mean, I can recall some years ago, they announced their tolerance is going from 107 kilometres per hour to 105. So yeah, we know they do have a tolerance. I myself don't work with that tolerance. I spend my life on cruise control, you know, which is 100K, and that's it, and that's good for me.
You have no tolerance without Concert FM, actually.
That's
I was going
right.
to say that as well. That's exactly what I was going to say. And speaking to your Concert FM, Concert FM is saying you will not go 1 kilometre over the limit, not at all.
It's a bit like saying, you know, that there never was an orange light. It was always either red or green. You were seeing things, this, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's strange. Like every Easter weekend, we often hear from police and their administrators that sort of say, hey, you know, if you're 5 kilometres over the limit, you'll be fine now. But in the past, that might have been okay. Over the years, there's been plenty of cases, I guess, where senior police officers from regions all over New Zealand have said there's been tolerance. So I think it's interesting that this case has come out. I've received a speed ticket for being 6 kilometres over the limit. And I was a bit annoyed at that, thinking I was driving safe, I wasn't drunk. I must have been over the limit, but I wasn't causing danger to too many people, and I always thought there was leniency. But obviously it just comes down to whether or not at that particular stage, if a certain government department needs to make a lot of money or not. They didn't get away with this one though, did they? No, I don't think so.
The cynical view. Is this something else we know but never want to talk about? This was on RNZ, a Robin Hood style policy redistributing the big salaries of public service chief executives to lower paid workers would be more effective than the government ordered pay freeze, according to Otago Uni accounting professor Dr. Helen Roberts. Mike, yes or no?
Well, partly. I just don't think that there are enough very highly paid public service chief executives to make much of a difference if you redistributed their entire salaries to the people at the bottom of the heap.
How often have we discussed this, though? You know, I mean, Lavina, good, qualified, public-minded people, what, might become the Auditor General or the Chief Ombudsman for half the money? And still, that's still a lot of money?
It's still a lot of money. If you weigh up some of the earnings of the public sector around the country, New Zealand Super Funds, the head of that organisation is making over $900,000. The Auditor General is close to $700,000. Tertiary Education Commissioner is over $500,000. So, I mean, there's some top wages out there. You pay people what they're worth. I've never been opposed to that. I just think that the comparison here to put a freeze on wages over $60,000 probably wasn't the best decision, when you could maybe, I'm not saying take it, all the pay off the top earners, but maybe weigh it out a little bit, make it a little bit more even. And I think balanced is the appropriate word. Balance. Well, you've got some people on the public sector who are earning $50,000 and yes, less, that are not surviving so well. Rather than put a freeze on the 60 and above, maybe weigh up some of these top earners and see what they're doing and value for money if it's paying off. I think the chief ombudsman is on $450,000. So there's plenty of coin out there in the public sector at the top shelf, not so much at the bottom. And that reminds me of a private sector that we live in as well.
I think another argument in favour of these very big salaries is that in a lot of instances where you're in an international market. I mean, I listened to a speech from the head of Treasury, whose last name evades me, but her first name is Currently.
I'm sorry, it's currently evading me as well.
Yeah, and she is an Australian academic who we've recruited to head up Treasury, and she was very, very impressive. So I think you've got that argument too.
Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern tops Fortune magazine's World's Greatest Leaders list for her leadership during the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as her world-leading climate and gender equity policies.
But in my first public meeting as a candidate, I got booed for my views on climate change. Now, you know, that is not the conversation anymore.
The top job at the UN, Mike, comes up next year. That's a current conversation at the moment. Can you see that being a temptation?
I can't, for two reasons. The Secretary General usually serves two terms, and this one's only done the one. There's only one, I looked this up, there's only one Secretary General has served one term in the history of the UN, and that was Boutros Ghali. So I suspect that this guy's going to get two. And I don't think that it's time appropriate for Jacinda to take an overseas job. She's got a toddler, you know, and she's announced that what primary school that kid's going to, it's one in Mount Albert. So I don't think she's looking over the horizon at the moment. And she's also got a lot to achieve. I mean, her focus is child poverty, and things are not happening quickly as they wouldn't. But, you know, I think she'll gnaw on that bone for a lot longer.
Lavina? Fortune magazine's been ranking, I think, the top 50 world leaders since 2014. I knew that Jacinda had featured on it in the past, but this is the first time that she'd reached that numero uno position. I was speaking to the mayor of Rotorua a couple of weeks ago, actually, Stevie Chadwick, and she was just saying how remarkable Jacinda has been over the years. She mentored Jacinda coming through the ranks and said, you know, she's just this country girl that went to Waikato University that doesn't rule, but she seems to have a lot of people beneath her that see her as an amazing leader. So she's done tremendously well, and there's plenty of people on that list that could have gone to the top, but no, they picked Jacinda. The interesting thing for me, Jim, is that no, she won't have that opportunity for the United Nations, because we forget that Jacinda Ardern is female and they don't pick women for that role. Okay. They only pick men.
Well, I haven't yet.
The time might come. Rosalia, maybe Artiga might have a chance, but I tell you what, it's been a long, long time since they've seriously considered a female for that role.
Mike Williams, one for you. The six people charged with fraudulently donating $34,000 to the Labor Party, the serious fraud office charges, allege identities were not disclosed in the annual return of donations. Money was paid using an intermediary bank account before being deposited, and multiple donors created to create the illusion of sums below the disclosure threshold and conceal the true identity of the actual donor. Now, Labor's General Secretary Rob Salmon says the Labor Party has complied with the law. A trial related to donations to the National Party is scheduled to begin at the High Court in Auckland in September. So, again, the question of public funding of political parties comes up. What do you think?
Well, I think Bryce Edwards really doesn't understand the current situation. His opinion
in his column.
Yeah. There is state funding of political parties, and this flows in two streams. One is the broadcast grant, which political parties, when I was president of the party, there was about $3 million were handed out to do radio and television. The two big parties typically got about $1 million each, and the minor parties split the other million between them. That's one flow of state funding. Now, the other is what's called the Leaders Fund, and that is a fund that is undiscoverable by journalists that flows through the Leaders Office, and it funds people like Heather Simpson and Wayne Eggleston, who was John Key's chief of staff. Now, those are, and it also funds all of the party's research. I mean, when I was president, we were paying over $1 million a year to UMR to do regular tracking polling.
A million a year?
Well, in excess of that. And the National Party will be doing the same. So there is state funding. And I think that his argument against it is also fatuous. They're saying that, you know, these people are going to work under political funding and become MPs. Well, that's true, but that is something I encouraged. And, for example, Jacinda Ardern, Chris Hipkins, Grant Robertson have all worked at Parliament. And the advantage of that is they know how it works. But equally, you know, there's plenty of room for outsiders to come. Kelvin Davis never worked at Parliament. Megan Woods never worked at Parliament. So I think that the situation that we've got at the moment is perfectly balanced. And also, I work for the Australian Labor Party, which has overt political funding. When I was there in the 80s, it was about $2 per vote. And that really doesn't change the parties at all.
Are private donations more democratic, though? Because party memberships are in decline, and therefore, in theory, are parties more beholden to larger donors seeking advantage?
To some degree they are, but there's a limit of 15,000 before your name is revealed. I mean, these shenanigans that are being revealed in the case against these donors has nothing to do with the Labor Party. All of this fiddling with the money occurred before the Labor Party knew about these donations, and you wouldn't know. But the law does seem to have turned into a bit of a minefield, but I would remind people that I walked through this minefield for 10 years and I never had any problems at all. I don't think the law is well promulgated.
Lavina, what are your thoughts on this?
It's the third set of charges that I know of that are related to political donations in recent times, and you just keep hearing the serious fraud office coming out and charging people. And I'm glad Mike clarified that for me. I just wanted to make sure if you donate more than $15,000 within a year, even if you make smaller donations throughout the year, as soon as it amounts $15,000, that donor needs to be identified, and hence why I guess the media are jumping on this at the moment and the serious fraud office are getting more attention than what you'd assume. But I tell you what, for me, to be brutally honest, I think regardless of whether or not Labor and National say that they've followed the law, for me, it really is eroding public trust.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The result of what's, and that's the effect it's having. Whether or not they come out and say, hey, we didn't do anything illegal, for me, as a member of the public, the trust issue has a question mark next to it, and that will be the long-term effect. Mm.
Lavina, there's been a lot of talk at Parliament about race this past week. The Māori Party's Rāwhiti Waititi ejected from the House for his haka protest against National's racist propaganda.
Order. The member will now leave the chamber.
Are you hearing, quote, a constant barrage of insults to tangata whenua, or are you hearing legitimate questioning of whether Labor is quietly implementing aspects of the He Puapua Working Group report on a plan to realise the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Lavina?
You probably have to look into that He Puapua report a little more and how long it's been around. And even though it hasn't been presented to Cabinet at this stage, it has been considered by several ministers. The term Puapua actually means break, the breaking of water. So that has suggested to some people that, you know, the government might be considering as we move forward to a 2040 date that Māoridom, in terms of self-determination, might be able to help self-govern themselves in a united form with a government next to them. So I guess the report has come out, and in a way it's a bit of a frightening factor for some people, and Judith Collins is focusing a lot of energy and time as to what is not good about this report, and as it moves forward she wouldn't support it in any way. I'm not sure if the Indigenous rights Indigenous people have been criticised when it comes to what Orat Wairua is saying, but in terms of moving forward, I think it's something that needs to be considered, and the He Puapua report is stirring things up at the moment, and there's lots of people that won't like the result of it. And at the moment, Jacinda Ardern is kind of saying, we're looking into it, but nothing definite at this stage.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Mike, Claire Robinson, who is Professor of Communication Design at Massey, writes in The Guardian that Jacinda Ardern may find herself having little choice but to come out and support Māori self-management, self-determination, self-governance, whether Cabinet likes it or not. Do you agree this puts the Labor government between the rock and the hard place?
No, it certainly doesn't. There was a Herald editorial yesterday, and the Herald is not a left-wing newspaper, pointing out that this He Puapua is merely a discussion paper and it really has no validity at all. And if you have a look, I mean, Heather Simpson did a two-year analysis of the health system, and it was completely ignored. She wanted to keep DHBs. Well, we're abolishing them. So that's what happens to these papers. And, you know, Jacinda Ardern will know the mere mention of a separate Maori parliament, which is in He Puapua, is political suicide. She will know that. Now, just what's Judith Collins doing? Well, when parties get desperate, they play the race card, and that's really all this is.
I don't have much time left. I want to ask, Lavina, the word hero is used a lot these days, isn't it? Maybe overused, but the Dunedin Central countdown manager stabbed four times after confronting an attacker and the people with him, Lavina, this past week.
Yeah, insane, isn't it, that that could happen in New Zealand? It broke my heart to think that this would happen. A hero for me, Jim, is someone that when there's not enough food on the table doesn't eat the food, and I think we need to be careful about what's heroic and what's not. I think violence in supermarkets is increasing tremendously. I'm closely affiliated with what happens with violence in supermarkets, and the one piece of advice I can give is not to chase anyone around if they're trying to steal from you, not to confront anyone, but when someone tries to attack someone with a knife, that is quite a feat to try and stop them and in the end be hospitalised through your injuries.
Yeah, thank you.
Crazy.
And heroic standing up to that. Mike Williams, I don't have time for your comment on that, but thank you for your company. And Lavina Good.